Good morning. The time is 8 a.m. You're listening to KBNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. During a recent visit to Western Colorado, Governor John Hickenlooper told a crowd in Craig that he wants to work towards compromise on managing the greater sage grouse. As the Daily Sentinel reports, Hickenlooper listened to concerns from local politicians and residents about how proposed regulations to manage the bird could impact the energy industry. As head of the Western Governors Association, Hickenlooper said leaders need to take a science-based approach to managing the bird. The BLM has recently been trying to keep the bird from being listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act, while also developing management strategies to protect it. In Rifle, Hickenlooper reportedly spoke with Dan Ash, director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, about the sage-grouse issue. The governor described the conversation as heated, adding, quote, "It was one of the rare times I raised my voice." Hickenlooper also said he and Ash staunchly disagreed on some of the science around managing the bird. Garfield County Commissioner Mike Sampson has previously asked for Hickenlooper to select a point person for dealing with the issue, something the governor said he's willing to do. During his visits, Hickenlooper said he and other Western governors are working on broader regulations for oil and gas development that would satisfy the energy industry and environmentalists. However, he did say fracking bans like those approved in some Front Range communities this year violate the rights of mineral owners. Officials with the Delta Montrose Electric Association are saying two new hydroelectric facilities will save $2.25 million a year, thanks to clean, renewable energy. As The Watch reports, it's expected the new facilities on the South Canal will generate more hydroelectricity to the DMEA grid than last year. Water to the Gunnison Tunnel was already shut off and winterized in late October. DMEA engineer James Hennigan told The Watch about 16,000 megawatt hours of hydroelectric energy were produced at the two facilities this year. Now, after some upgrades, the energy co-op expects about 24,000 to 28,000 could be produced next year. Hennigan also said he expects the two sites will run for the entire irrigation season next year, which could start sometime in April. In all, the DMEA estimates about 5% of its yearly electric needs will come from the new hydro plants. A statewide group of business and community leaders is calling for fast action on immigration reform. As the Denver Post reports, the executive director of the group, known as Action 22, said the people and organizations she represents are, quote, tired of talking. A handful of business organizations from northeastern and western Colorado, as well as the Denver metro area, held a conference call earlier this week to push for an immigration reform bill before the current legislative session ends. According to the Post, the group says the current immigration system is broken and that it's hurting ag and tourism industries more than others. Meanwhile, State Representative Spencer Swalm has tried to slow some of the momentum towards immigration reform. Swalm has a proposal in the works to study the effects of illegal immigration on low-income workers in Colorado. That plan's been criticized as unnecessary by some, but Swalm has countered by arguing that a rush to reform is purely political, saying that Democrats want to bring in low-wage workers because they might become Democratic voters. Immigration reform supporters also gathered in Montrose over the weekend to send their own message to Congressman Scott Tipton. Ricardo Perez, the executive director of the Hispanic Affairs Project, said reform is especially important to the Montrose region since a large part of the population are immigrant workers who also make up a large part of the economy in western Colorado. Joel Salatin has become one of the rock stars of the local food movement. He's written books, appeared in documentaries, and scheduled speaking engagements nationwide. Among foodies, he's sort of a celebrity. The move to source locally has taken hold across the country, but still faces many hurdles, and it's not for everyone. KUNC and Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon spoke with Salatin about those challenges from his farm in rural Virginia, where he raises free-range chickens, lambs, and cattle.
You're one of the biggest leaders in the local food movement. You've been quoted in various books. You've been in the documentary Food Inc. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges that are facing the local food movement right now? And how are people attempting to overcome those problems?
There are legal and non-legal challenges. I think if I could divide it into the two, when you come to legal issues, the biggest problem right now is the suffocating Food Modernization Act that came in on the heels of you know, the peanut scare in Georgia and these other things. The second issue, I think, is probably the distribution. That's a big problem. The industry has just very much enjoyed talking about food miles and carbon footprints, and that supermarkets are far more efficient than farmers markets, because even though farmers markets are localized, the small volumes that farmers are bringing to them don't justify the distribution miles, even on a local scale. I understand that argument. That is creating a very prejudicial price in the marketplace because of the inefficiencies of small-scale local distribution. Fortunately, because that is not a legal issue, it is enjoying a tremendous amount of innovative entrepreneurship, so that we're seeing an explosion of what I call electronic aggregation, so that we have virtual farmers market softwares popping up everywhere, so that we can shop online locally in real time with virtually door-to-door delivery, or certainly drop zones, drop points. And this is creating tremendous economies of scale on the local level.
That almost sounds like more of a regional food system rather than a local food system. Do you think that that's where the conversation needs to go? Less focus on, you know, this hyper-local and more on these regional systems?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you know, if you ask five people their definition of local, you'll get five different answers. And I certainly don't have an answer. You know, people say, well, you know, is 100 miles really local or 50 miles really local? Well, you know, we can argue about that, but it's sure more local than 2,000 miles. And so part, of course, eating local is to have an educated consumer base that appreciates seasonality and domestic culinary skills. Those two elements are critical for developing a credible regional food system.
I'm wondering if there's a class component to the conversation about local food as well. You have these farm-to-table dinners with pretty high price tags. You have this perception that only wealthy people can afford to shop at high-end grocery stores like Whole Foods, which source a lot locally. Does the movement have a perception problem at all?
Absolutely. The elitist. I'll go ahead and say it. I mean, I've been certainly accused of being an elitist. Whenever somebody says that they can't afford our food, and this applies to, you know, inner city, suburban, urban, whatever, it doesn't matter, rural, I want to grab them by the collar and say, okay, take me to your house. And I'm sure here's what we're not going to find. We're not going to find a flat screen TV. We're not going to find Burger King or McDonald's takeout. You see where I'm heading with this? The fact is that there is money in the system, and to just simplify it and say, well, because it's higher priced, it's elitist, begs the question of a personal value system, a personal value statement. And yes, there are definitely impoverished, down and out people. My heart goes out to them. I can't solve every problem that's out there, but I do know one thing, that there are tremendous ways to change our valuation of what.
That was author and farmer Joel Salatin talking about the biggest challenges facing the local food movement. He runs a ranch and farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley, and he spoke with Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon. Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues and is a collaboration of KUNC and other public media stations in the Midwest. You can find highlights from the interview at harvestpublicmedia.org. You're listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is Regional News. Thanks for tuning in this morning, and stay tuned for the Wednesday morning music mix. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.